All right, everybody, welcome back to the Occult 45 podcast. I'm your host, Evan D. We're back from the hiatus, baby. Had like a nice, you know, little year off. I had some stuff I had to work in to my life after ayahuasca. So I had to kind of work on some integration stuff and just take a little step back from the podcasting. But we're back, episode 27, one of my new favorite YouTube channels. I guess I've been listening to you for a couple months now, but man, fell in love with the channel instantly.
Thank you.
Yeah, man, we got the creator of Library of the Untold with us, man. What's up, Joey?
What's up, dude? So we kicked this thing off strong with ayahuasca, huh?
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're doing.
Tell me about your experience, dude. I mean, I know I'm supposed to talk or whatever, but I want to hear about this.
So I was there in the Amazon jungle. I flew to Iquitos and then took a boat like a few hours up the Amazon River.
Doing real, dude. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to do it that way. So I did that and I was hanging out with this family who's like gotta be one of the best in the world, because I mean it was just insane. And they've been doing this for thousands of years, you know. It's in their DNA, dude. Like,
what did you see while you were under the influence?
I saw a lot of the same beings that I see in the DMT realm.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of the same ones, but way more newer ones, like with the ayahuasca. It was like different ones that the shamans are like friends with.
Wow.
Yeah, dude. So they'll spend.
What always freaks me out, man, is how with ayahuasca in particular, there seems to be a shared consciousness where multiple people will see the same beings simultaneously. And that does not fit under the category of hallucination, if you ask me.
Well, yeah, you know, in past episodes on this show, like I feel like now I'm ready to grow the show into like talking about the deeper meanings, because the ayahuasca beings were like laughing at me and they were like, you can call us aliens if you want. We're not that, but okay. And they're like laughing and they're like, okay. Cause like, since I contacted like these things with DMT, like within like the last 5 years,
right.
They've like said like, yeah, like they were telling me on the ayahuasca that over that time, like I was so hung up on the fact like that they're like interdimensional, like aliens. Now with the ayahuasca, they were like, okay, now let us show you deeper stuff than just we're interdimensional beings. That's like nothing. Like, check this out. Right. And they like showed me a lot of crazy stuff. I have a whole journal from the time that I was there.
Yeah.
It was just crazy, man. And the Icaros that the shamans sing, you know, they were taught these medicine songs by these plant beings that inhabit the plant. So they'll spend time with just that plant, and then it comes and downloads these songs when they're dreaming. And then when you drink ayahuasca with them, all of those songs come flooding back to them. And that's how they, yeah, dude. And that's how they communicate with these like interdimensional plant beings. So
that was literally amazing. I've never done ayahuasca, but I mean, I've never done real ayahuasca. I made my own one time. And you know, I've had several DMT experiences. I've never had jesters. I've never had clowns before. However, I have had some really dark ones, which is not uncommon, I came to find out. But I think that a lot of the darkness involved in DMT might be due to misunderstandings. Some of them were quite literally vicious and meant to be a bad trip. And I, some of them were so bad, I don't know if they were meant to be for my betterment or not. But some of them were just difficult to get through, which I assumed might have been for my betterment. But, so I read The Cosmic Serpent by Jeremy Narby. And that book
That book was on the bookshelf at the ayahuasca
perfect
place that I was at. Yeah,
yeah. He went in there to get his hands dirty and to find out, okay, he's like, is this going on in our heads, or is there something, or is it outside of us and we're experiencing it objectively? And throughout the book, he's struggling between those two things, when finally towards the end of the book, and spoiler alert, everybody, he finds out the obvious answer. It's both. And it's always both. The gray, it's not even a gray area. It's completely both at the same time. And that's the paradox that I think that most people have trouble dealing with, is they're like, are these aliens, do they exist outside of me when I'm not tripping, or is it all in my head? And it's like you get slapped in the face with this obvious answer. It's like, dude, it's all subjective, every single little part of it. And it's everything all at once. It's almost like DMT and ayahuasca shows you infinity in a way, but you are tested and graded throughout the trip. And that can be very difficult for a lot of people. It was difficult for me at first, you know, my first few DMT trips, you know, and I did mine alone, you know, my DMT trips. So it was, I have a journal as well where you've seen my YouTube channel, so I'm not shy about sharing those pictures, you know, on the podcast or whatever, but if I might tell you about my experience trying to make ayahuasca, is that cool? Or
yeah, that's fine. You can tell us about that. You know, we don't endorse these things. These are just
that's why I'm asking.
Personal experiences, you know. So I mean, well, you just, you know, and
in my case, I certainly don't endorse it because it was actually one of the bad ones. But
okay, I gotcha. Was it pharmawasca or was it like actual ayahuasca? Okay.
No, yeah, you got it. So, I partook in it and I waited a bit and I got a feeling that I was going to throw up. I went to go throw up and I mean, I just started tripping, but it wasn't like a DMT trip. It was very heavy and it was very weighed down. And even though I was still in this realm, in this world, everything was very strange. And a worm, some kind of worm, came through the ceiling of my bathroom, and it was like holding some kind of rod of light. And it waved it over my body. And as it got close to my body, out of my lungs came this fucking, like just a frequency that was, and I was like, why are you making me do this? And it was like, well, we got to gauge your frequency, dude. I was like, why do you have to gauge my frequency? And then it was like, all right, we got it. And then it took off and it was gone. And I was just like, what the hell was that? It was beyond strange. And I was one of the people who struggled with, was that something outside of me, objective and real, that I could perceive because of this drug, or was that just in my head? And I had to, you know, find out, you know, through other experiences and reading Narby's book, that it's both. It's subjective because the way you interpret it is personal to you, but there is something there to be interpreted. And that's what I think is important.
Yeah, I definitely enter in that space, man. It's that, definitely, I get the, like, yeah, very, very important, like, symbology, like, very sacred geometry, and, like, Thoth the Atlantean-type beings, like, bird people. Like, I've seen that a lot, like, yep. These bird-headed beings. And that noise that you're talking about coming out of your lungs, yep. Somebody I was watching on a mycology channel, mushroom growing, and he was talking about a trip where, well, what he said was, the mushrooms can speak to you, of course they can, but they can also speak through you.
Right.
And he said, if that happens, you want to have people around to witness that, because it's something so special. And I was just like, what the hell? So, like, that brings me to, like, those, like, glossolalia type, like, chattering that Terrence McKenna would talk about, you know, like an elvish, like, chatter.
Right.
I hear that often,
it's
too.
It's almost like speaking in tongues in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, sometimes these beings speak in like a totally like electronic like language. It sounds like, but you understand it somehow. And sometimes they speak in my own voice, and sometimes they'll speak in like a like their voice.
But I have a recording of my own voice in just one tone that is, it sounds like a dial-up signal from like the 90s. And I couldn't reproduce that noise right now if I tried. And it was actually one of those things where my wife at the time recorded it because she heard it from downstairs where I was partaking in the activity. And she was like, well, I got to record this. I wouldn't have even known I was making that sound, bro. At this particular time, I mixed cubensis mushrooms with Syrian rue and then DMT. And it was almost like, at that point, by the way, I especially don't endorse that much because, yes, there was a lot of information there, but too much. I couldn't download any of it to be to make any sense of it. It was too abstract, you know?
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean by too abstract. Right. You know, I ayahuasca, that was not this past December, but the December before. And that was the last time I visited like a realm like that. And, you know, because especially some of the DMT experiences I used to have too, like really like kind of like shook the hell out of my like core, like,
right,
like medical type experiments. Like the one time, I tell this story on the show a lot, I'll just tell you real quick, but
sure.
This one really stands out in my head. I've had like a tube plugged into my chest, and wow. I could feel in my physical body like a pain, like right here, kind of. And I was like, what? And my girlfriend who was like helping me through the experience, she saw me grab my chest. And then I was telling her this after, she's like, yeah, you grabbed your chest. And I could just feel like a pain right here. And I was like, why are you guys doing this? And they were like, because we have to. And it was like this crazy, like gray tube with like red, like bubbles on it. That's all I remember. And also I've had like this, like elf, like creature. I mean, I don't even know, dude. It's almost looks like us, but definitely not. They're like such like elves, man. Well, and yeah, stuck like this needle tool in between my two front teeth. And when I came out of the experience, I could taste this crazy, like metallic, like crazy taste in my mouth. I had to just keep spitting in the garbage for like half an hour. So like, is that all upstairs, or is that like actually happening?
Right. And this is crossing into the realm of alien abduction.
Well, exactly, dude. Some of these experiences are like, yeah, basically like that. And it's just like, really
I get a little bit of flack sometimes because, so I'm deeply interested in the symbolism, archetypes, and experiences of alien abduction cases. And I don't disbelieve them. I really don't. But I do liken them to DMT experiences in which people often respond with, oh, you know, you can't chalk that up to just being hallucinations. And I say, no, on the contrary, that's not at all what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that DMT and these hallucinogens are actually something more than we think that they are. And it's not the case that alien abductions can be explained away as being DMT experiences or hallucinations. What I'm saying is that DMT hallucinations are something more than science is currently assuming that it is. In some way, somehow, for some purpose, that there is an involuntary element of it to some people who are in this particular program by a sentience outside of us that insists on coming into this reality through us, speaking through us, experiencing through us. And we can tap into that being anybody through DMT. However, there are certain chosen people who get this involuntarily. And it has something to do with a fascination with our physical nature and our ability to reproduce on our own that is kindled with our free will. The way I've always thought about it is that there's a hive mind to almost everything in the universe. 99.99% of living species on just in this reality is like hive mind, you know, birds, whales, ants. They all share one mind and they act accordingly. You've seen birds fly in sync. You've seen that ants, they all think as the queen. The queen is thinking, the rest of them are working, and it's one mind. They build a bridge. One ant didn't come up with that. It's the entire hive mind, right? So what I feel is going on is that these DMT beings, we see them as archetypes of us because it's a reflection of us, because they don't have a natural, true, actual physical form. So when we do see them, we are painting them with our imagination, our current, like our mythology goes into that, not our current mythology, our entire collective hive mind of mythology. And they are fascinated with our free will and ability to reproduce, the same way that you would have like a virus, right? A virus can't reproduce with another virus and make more viruses. They need a host. And whenever we go to the bottom of the ocean and we find a new species, that there's no way this thing can live in boiling water. The first thing we do is we ask ourselves, how does this thing reproduce? What does it do to make more of itself? I think that's what's going on another level. We have this idea that we are the top dog of sentience in the universe, and we forget that a fish can't study us anymore than we can study these things that are literally looking at us. So we're looking up at this thing that is so incredibly abstract to us that we can't put a finger on it, because we study atoms. We study physical matter. We're addicted to the scientific method. And in a way, it's a shame. I understand it's like a responsible thing to do. But if a being that is a hive mind came across us, it would be so fascinated with our free will and our divine spark to think for ourselves and act differently as individuals, that it would want to study that. And in a way, as like the demiurge, be kind of jealous, or I should say the archons, be kind of jealous of our free will. They want the same things that we have. In a way, we're not inferior to them. In a way, we're superior to them, but we have smaller consciousnesses, so we get kind of mixed up with that, you know?
Wow, man. Yeah. Beautifully worded. That's so amazing, dude. And this actually was awesome, because I wanted to talk about your newest video, Womb World, and I have something written down that really, really hit me, man. You were like, alien... it would be weirder if the alien abduction thing wasn't happening.
Right.
Like, dude, that was just like, I was like, damn, dude.
I'm glad you caught that, because honestly, ever since I was a kid, I'm looking around like, we feel like the buck stops here, you know? I've said this a couple times on my channel, but it bears repeating. An ant can see like bacteria, but the bacteria can't look up and see the ant. We can look down and see an ant, but the ants can't look up and see us. If an ant made eye contact with you, you'd fucking freak out, you know? But so as above, so below, that keeps going, right? The bacteria can see molecules, but the molecule can't see up at it. At that point, we're getting abstract. But the point is, we can see down, but we can't see up. So why do we think that the buck stops at us, knowing now that you can't see up, you can only see down in dimensions? The chances are that we live on a planet that is most likely, very likely to be like babies in a womb, where the Earth is a sentient being that we can't even imagine, but our 3D reality, our perception sees it in 3D as a sphere, right? And no, I'm not going to go into any, let's not discuss the shape of the planet type shit. That's not my concern. But existentially speaking, as far as dimensions go, we can't see up. Why do we assume that there is no up in that case? Well, of course, the reason we assume that there is no up is because we can't see it. But it's so ignorant. So in that case, we study everything down, 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 down. We study only things that are down. And we stop and we say, we must be the highest. It's ignorant. So in that way, it must be, as you had said, it's weirder. If the abduction, if we aren't being studied, that's weirder. It's like saying that there's no life in the universe. What are the chances?
Yeah, I mean, the math on that just isn't looking good, you know?
Right. And that goes into, I don't think that the aliens are from another planet. I think
they're from here.
I think it's too simple to be from another planet. That's what we do. Right. We go to other planets, well, or so we say, to other countries when we're in competition. But I mean, I feel like there is something outside of our hard drive. It would be like if you were in a video, if you were playing a video game, and then you just found out that one of the NPCs in there was extremely intelligent, and despite what you program it to do, did whatever the fuck it wanted to do. Can I curse?
Yep, that's completely good.
Nice. So if that was to, if you were to find out that one of the characters in the game that you designed had free will, it'd freak you out a little bit. You'd want to get in there and figure out what's going on. And it might be against the rules of the game, of the video game creators. You know, they might have rules involved where you can't interfere with them. But some of them sneak in. You know, they get in here. Whitley Strieber describes the UFO that he was in to have been a complete mess. It was filthy, he said. And he was saying that they were just doing work for another higher life form themselves. It was like they were disorganized. It's almost as if these grays are worker bees, like ants, that are working for particular queen bees, you know? And that brings me to a thing. I think that the grays might be remote controlled. Not in a way like an RC car as much as like more like an ant, like that is controlled by the queen hive mind, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people report that too. Like they're, and then the talk you were saying in that newest video also, which I've heard from other people also, there's like taller ones who are like in charge of like the medical shit.
Right. So. It's kind of amazing that we get that report of the hive mind type deal from multiple societies throughout history. Everyone who is abducted now assumes that this is a modern thing, and this goes back thousands of years. Therianthropes, you know, back in the day. I mean, dudes with bird heads is on cave walls, and that's exactly what we see with DMT. There's really almost no surprise here. We were just unprepared because we didn't pay attention the entire time. I feel like the schooling system has pigeonholed us in consciousness. And now when this same shit that's been happening throughout our entire history has continued to happen, for whatever reason, now we're surprised.
Right. And now there's so many people, you know, it's happening to a lot of people. So it's like they can't keep it hidden too much longer.
Right.
And the ayahuasca beings that I was hanging out with on one of the nights let me feel what that feeling is of like this like bubbling to the top, like it's about to like completely just explode. And it was a really good feeling that they let me feel, and it was just like this like uprising and they were like, finally, like
orgasm, like, of the soul,
we can't stay hidden forever, they were saying. Like,
right,
dude.
Yep.
It's getting crazy.
In fairy folklore, everyone in the medieval times, roughly medieval, 1620s, whatever, 1600s, people were abducted by fairies. And the main theme, the main message that they were given back then was, there's more to this world than your five senses is capable of understanding, and we're trying to get this across to you. It's almost as if they want our species to evolve past the animal body. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, you know, and like a lot of people are like, oh, that's demonic stuff. Like, I don't, it doesn't
everything's seem demons, like that. Bro. If it ain't Jesus, it's demons.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't seem like that to me at all. But
no, so, that's a huge misconception about, like,
I feel like that's keeping us pigeonholed, dude, you know?
Yeah.
In right. just another way.
Things alien to us are ugly, and that gets confusing. If you read Babylonian texts from I don't have a date, but whatever, Babylonian times, they're, you know, whatever. They describe Oannes. They describe these fish people. They describe them as hideous beings. Abominable is one of the words that is used. Abominable. I'm saying that wrong. Abominable. Abominable.
Abominable.
Abominable. Right. It's a strong word.
Yeah. It is. It is.
It's yesterday's cursing. And what's so strange about that is that they attribute their ability to do statues and certain kinds of art, even their counting system, to these beings that were hideous to the eyes. And throughout history, every single time that a human has generated a god or a deity in personification to represent something, it was made to be glorious and beautiful. You know, you got the Brahma, you've got the Shiva, you've got these beings that are personification. We always make them beautiful and glorious. But these creatures were described as abominable, as hideous. And it makes you think that human psychology doesn't live in reverence to something that it finds hideous. So that shows us that this was something outside of us that was interfering with our reality. As if a fish was trying to teach you something, it would freak you out quite a bit, you know? And Oannes, I think, is the perfect example of that. Before that, they were called the Nomos of the Dogon tribe. You know, they were fish people. They were not pleasant to look at.
That's over in like Mali, Africa.
Right. Yeah, that's okay. The ones in northern Africa. And now they were descendants of Egypt, and where they got this information was while they were in Egypt at the time. So the Dogon didn't actually make contact with Nomos. The oral tradition was passed down to them from ancient Egypt. But it goes to show you that back then, whenever they saw something hideous, they acknowledged it was hideous and strange to them, but they still took it for what it was worth. Whereas nowadays, if something is alien to us, we regard it as quite literally anti-Christian. And that is a problem for growth for the entire species.
That's a very, very strong way to close that sentence, and it makes so much sense, dude, because it's, yeah, keeping the entire species in this like holding pattern of like the same bullshit,
right? Like, I mean, imagine if hypothetically speaking, we were to find out that the actual Jesus was completely different than we assumed him to be, especially now with the white Jesus that is passed around so liberally. A lot of people need to realize at some point that if you would call actual Jesus demonic if he looked weird to you, it's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are stuck in their worldview, you know, their paradigm is set in stone, so it's
right.
They don't want any of this stuff.
There's like, no growth in stone.
Right. And that's like one thing, like talking about this kind of stuff, I've kind of figured out too. It's like not everybody, it's not that people like don't like the people who like you would try to talk to about this and they don't want to hear it. It's like they can't like hear it. Like it,
right.
They can't accept, so it's like they really just brush it off. So it's like
that took me so long to accept, dude. That I assumed that people were stubborn before I realized that they were actually disabled. Disabled is a, that's wrong. Hold on. that they are incapable. You know, that's better. That's a better way to say it. Incapable of. And we even have that with UFO fanatics. You know, people who are absolutely convinced that UFOs are from another planet. They really, the ultra-terrestrial hypothesis, if you ask me, is way more likely if you look at the whole big picture.
Way more likely.
Right. And you know, History Channel has a franchise dedicated to the idea that all of this abstraction comes from another planet. It's really narrow of a way to look at things.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because there's stuff beyond just other planets that we don't understand. It's these different, but I mean, there's people here who do understand it. Obviously, they're not letting that out. But I think a lot of it is about to be exposed, I think. But
well, it eventually kind of has to be. I mean, yeah. I almost feel like the word disclosure is ignorance in itself. Because it imposes the idea that we depend on a higher government than ourselves to actually verify that something is real. That to me is complete bullshit. Like,
yeah, no, yeah. I mean, disclosures happened for me, so I mean, I already know that it's real, so.
Right.
Now I just want to, like, I mean, human origins would be cool to know. Human, right. How'd we get here? And, like, I lean towards zoo theory a lot. Like you were saying, we probably a product, like, of the grays. Like, they probably did. Because, like, I've had, like, ayahuasca beings that, like, weren't, like, they weren't, like, letting me see them. But they were telling me, we made you. You guys are our favorite version yet. And I was just like, what?
Our favorite version yet.
Mm-hmm. That's what they said to me. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's the scariest shit I've ever heard.
Yeah. You're our favorite version yet. We love you so much. So much. We love you.
Wow. Yes. And this is why they shut down the nuclear fucking weapon facilities whenever we get ready to hit the button.
Yeah,
we're the favorite version.
Exactly.
That's in the Apocrypha of John as well. That this new species is the fave.
Dude, wow. Crazy. So you're a favorite sapien, dude. You're
right.
Model A, man.
Right. And, you know, that brings me to the fact that, you know, that Jesus loves you. That whole deal. You get that every day. People want to argue with you based on the fact that Jesus loves you. And meanwhile, they're kind of missing the point that the species is a favorite somewhere. So, of course, Jesus loves me. This is, I mean, we've really got it going on here, you know. But I still kind of feel like we haven't quite passed the test. And that's more of a hunch than anything. But the notion remains. And I would argue to say that almost anybody feels that way, almost as if Earth is sort of a trial run is what it feels like, at least. I can't put any evidence on that, but that's what it feels like, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, the beings I talk about, like, you just got to take my word for it. I mean, I don't have proof of them, but I know that they're real. They've proven that to me.
That's the thing about
a long time ago.
Yeah, you talk about, I want to move on to human origins, so consciousness, all that stuff. So every time I see the Pentagon have a press conference about whether or not it's real A or B, this type of thing, it's almost like, dudes, catch up. We're done with that part.
Dude, I love that. Oh my God, I'm gonna use that one. Like, catch up.
Bill, it's like, guys, we've left that part. We're done with that part. We're moving on to the why. We're done with the what. It's time for the why. Like, what's up? Let's really dig deep into this thing. It almost feels like there's not a secret, but we feel like it's a secret because we keep it from ourselves. I feel like it's out in the open, but you have to get your consciousness to us, of which I have not yet, but you have to get yourself to a certain place of consciousness like the shamans have before you can be revealed that secret. And here's the catcher. Once you get that secret, you can't communicate that to other people. And as you had said a moment ago, it's not because they're stubborn. It's because they can't hear it.
Dude, that just made so – what everything you just said right there just made so much sense to me. Like, dude, thank you.
What, you ever come out of a DMC experience with so much to say but nothing to say?
Yeah, you just can't figure it out what to even start with. Yeah.
Right.
No, man.
All you can say is, there it is. Like, it's real. It's real. There it is. Like, you, there's people on their deathbeds, and they write notes. Like, they're in death process, and people ask them, you know, like, what are you seeing? What's there? And they'll scribble on a piece of paper, it's real. And then they just die. Like, but some of them survive long enough. They say, you know, what's real? They're like, it. Just it. Like, that's all I got, you know? I think the closest we've ever gotten is the Tibetan Book of the Dead. You know, when these monks, dude, these are the hardcore motherfuckers. These are the John Wayne.
Levitating stones and, like, breaking right. Shit with their voice.
Right, right. These are the dudes, man. They died to write the Tibetan Book of the Dead for just long enough to be able to come back, be resuscitated, and then report what they saw there, you know? There's no wonder that that book is huge. Because these guys stopped their heartbeat manually using, you know, these methods, these Eastern Kriya, these breathing exercises, some of them are so good that they don't have to actually do the Kriya anymore. They got that foot in the door, and now they can control their heartbeat manually. So they bring their heart to a stop, and then they resuscitate, and then you get the Tibetan Book of the Dead. They explain what they see on the other side, and then it kind of gives us a heads up of what is to come, of which I pay great attention to, because if you ask me, that's probably top five, one of the most important questions, you know, what happens upon death immediately, you know, and the sole purpose of the Tibetan Book of the Dead was not to reincarnate. What that tells me is that as beautiful as human life is, there's something better if you can transcend it. And they lay out quite literally the blueprints on how to transcend it. And when you pass that threshold, there really is no way to describe it. So you have the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which only and barely teaches you how to not recycle back into the realm of samsara again, which, by the way, throws a huge wrench into the whole conspiracy of the actual literal black cube of the soul recycler on the moon, which I have become quite upset with recently. But I mean, what do you do?
I have heard about that, how the moon is like traps your soul on the way out and then you come back.
Right.
I don't know if I'm with that.
It's complete nonsense, bro.
Yeah.
I can't say that with a shred of evidence, by the way, any more than I can any of the rest of this. But that whole conspiracy started because of a misconception. What they do is they take a metaphor, a mythology. They take something that's a parable, and they can't comprehend a metaphor, so they make it literal. Next thing you know, Reddit is filled up with conspiracies about a black cube soul recycler on the moon. It's because they can't handle something being a metaphor. So, like, the black cube is a metaphor of our human limitations with our five senses, the animal body. And that can be transcended. Think outside the box. That's where that came from, you know? But people don't like metaphors. We're not trained in school to understand metaphors. So what we do is we make it literal. And next thing you know, there's a Y-Files episode based off of my Hexagon of Saturn video that literally takes the black cube as an actual box on the moon with reptilians recycling your soul. And it's just not the case, you know. By the way, I love Y-Files. No hate involved there, but I understand how that episode came to be.
Yeah, right. I get you. Yeah, I do like that channel. I've only found that channel within like the last like year or so. So I haven't known about that channel at all for forever.
It's huge now, dude. Huge.
Yeah. I haven't watched everything on there, but I like it a lot.
I watch every single episode that comes out. For three reasons. Number one, they're really fucking good. And that really goes without saying. He is probably the best at what he does. Number two, I love it when people flood my emails with things that he says that may or may not have been from my show. I get a kick out of it. That's ego, by the way, but I got one. And number three, for real, all honestly, I get tips on how to flow my videos by watching Y-Files.
Dude, yeah, man, that's awesome. Yeah, some things in the style of the flow of, like, I definitely watch other shows and all that influences, you know, and
right.
It ends up being your own thing, and it's awesome. Right.
It's like I understand I could possibly talk circles around AJ, maybe, sure, but he can video circles around me, and I feel like a baby. Every time I watch Y-Files, dude, it's just straight 40 minutes of magic. It's the editing, everything about it, the cutaways, right? This is becoming a commercial for Y-Files. I need to quit it, but... I feel like I need to compliment the show because I do rip on it at the same time.
Shout out to Occult 45 podcast.
Right.
That's cool, man. Yeah, dude. Well, that's cool. Your videos flow well. I mean, so you've definitely learned how to edit. Awesome. I like your style, how it starts off like telling the story with like just your voice, and right. then it goes to you. With right. like all that cool like monitoring stuff that shows like the sine waves and shit, like
right,
it shows so, you talk, like I like all that shit.
So the sine wave behind me on the computer screen is actually my compressor, and the reason I do that is because it's meant to make a statement, but I don't think a lot of people have caught it the way I'm intended it to. But I'm going to continue doing it because I think it's very important. YouTube videos are all over the place in volume, and it pisses me off. I'm trying to work, and some videos are quiet, and then they're loud, and then there's a commercial that's obscenely loud, and then I can't understand what you're saying because it's too quiet. I'm like, dude, run your fucking voice through a damn compressor. Everything will be like right now I'm yelling, and it's going to be louder, right? So I have a compressor running behind me to show that if you're whispering or you're yelling, a compressor will fix that. Your video will be literally the same volume the entire time. I don't know. Call me old fashioned. That's important to me. But I don't have a Hollywood studio, so I run it through the compressor. That's what I do with it. But the intros for the channel was an accident, dude. I accidentally deleted about 4 minutes of video from the Hexagon of Saturn video, and all that was left was the audio. So I had to fill it in with pictures because I didn't want to re-record the whole thing. That literally became why we have intros on the channel now.
That is cool, man. That's cool. that's the song Flying High Again by Ozzy?
Yeah.
The beginning where he's like, oh no.
Yeah.
That was an accident because they pressed record and Ozzy said, oh no. And then like the dude like dubbed it and then it went, oh no. And then they were like, yeah, leave it.
Really?
That's how that got there. Yeah. Ozzy's my number one. So yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Oh man, dude, I feel like the Bark of the Moon riff in the chorus there. I know it wasn't Randy Rhoads, dude. That's my favorite riff of all time.
Oh, dude, yeah, and that solo is like one of my favorite solos ever.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and Randy Rhoads is definitely my number one. But yeah, Jakey Lee, what a player also. And that's Zach right. Wild, dude. We just went to Zach Wild's birthday show. It was Zach Sabbath.
And, oh damn,
dude! He was out in the crowd shredding on his. He put his guitar behind his head and he's shredding like 2 feet from me. Fucking Zach Wild, like crazy.
Damn.
Yeah.
Ozzy has said that multiple times that he doesn't choose Zach Wild as a guitar player, but he oftentimes is forced to because of how skilled he is. I find that to be amazing.
That is amazing.
This is a guy who, he was a kid, 8 hours a day practice, like no holds barred, not holding back. Like, I'm going to become the best at this thing than anybody else on earth, and I will not stop until I am the king of this instrument. And that's a huge statement because you've got a lot of competition in the world of guitar. And you can believe me, I spent half my life trying to become a rock star and it didn't happen, you know? But like Zach Wild was like, fuck that. I'm going to be the best and I'm going to be the one guy that anyone can count on, whether you're Pantera, Ozzy Osbourne, anybody. Like within an hour's notice, he can fill in on the guitar. Amazing.
Right. Yeah, definitely one of the best. His birthday is January 14th, and that's the day that we went and saw him. It was freaking – I've been wanting to see Zach Sabbath for a long time.
Nice.
It
goes to show you how big Ozzy is that on his birthday, on Zach's birthday, he's playing Ozzy songs.
right, dude, right? That's crazy. Yeah, and they're only like a month apart in birthdays also.
Ah.
I want to fly back across the ocean over to Western Africa real quick.
Let's go.
So, have you heard of the Mamiwada?
No. What's okay. that?
So, Paul Wallace on the Fifth Kind TV, do you know who that is?
Big fan, bro.
Okay, yeah, he's one of my favorites. And Paul Wallace talks about these – it's this African, like, not a legend. They just – it's just a story that they have of these sea people that – take people underwater to underground like facilities and like breed with them and stuff. And there's okay. like, there's multiple stories of people go missing and then they show up 2 years later and they're like, is this mic too loud or?
No, you're perfect.
Okay, cool. So they show up 2 years later and they're like, yeah, I got taken, but my captors weren't human. And they brought me to an underground facility and made like hybrid children with me. And I was forced to have like two babies. Yeah.
Dude, why didn't you tell me all of this before I did my abduction video? Now I need a part two.
Dude, you got to do a part two about the Mamiwada. Yeah. Dude,
yeah. So that's Womb World part two, man. The aquifer, okay, Aquaman edition.
Dude, yes. Yes.
Dude. I'm so glad you said that because, one second. All right. So the next video that me and Cregan are doing is, based off of the Chupa in Colares, Brazil, right? Where these dudes are getting zapped by these like flying refrigerators, right? So yeah, it's crazy. There's a lot of dead people involved. Check this out, dude. So people in Brazil get abducted a lot, and there's a lot to do with sex, right? So in by the way, this is Jacques Vallée's book Confrontations is what I'm about to show you here. And I know this is audio for most people, so I'll say it out loud. But as you can see it here, he draws a map of the concentration of the most abductions that happen in Brazil. And there's a little arrow, and this is in our next documentary on Library of the Untold coming up here, a little plug there. But every single one of these little hotspot concentrations is next to water. Every one of them. If it's not the ocean itself, it's next to a river or a giant gulf. Something is has to do with water. And this brings me to this idea that maybe they're not from outer space. Maybe they're from Earth. And maybe they went underground knowing that the Earth goes through a lot of shit on the surface. What if they are the original inhabitants of Earth and we are the new little brothers that they're trying to get to step up the game, you know?
Dude, chills, man. Because, like, yes, that makes too much sense. And like,
they all come out of the water, dude.
Dude, and they've figured out, yeah, why wouldn't you go under there? Like, after getting wiped out so many times, the survivors of these, like, great civilizations were like, dude, we're moving this whole thing up. Because there's even talk of Agartha used to be an island. And then at, like, the schism of, like, Urshu or whatever, it had to go underground and move and move its stone library underneath the ground, and where the history of humanity is chiseled in Vatanian script. And dude, if you look at Vatanian script, there's pictures of it in that Agartha book. Dude, it looks like a freaking shit that would be on the side of a UFO. I mean,
I think that the same way that we described, it would be weirder if abductions weren't happening, if there weren't higher life forms, that is. The same goes for, I mean, we know scientifically, fact, that the Earth is cavernous, like a lava rock, right? And we also know for a fact that the water beneath the surface of the Earth dwarfs the oceans. The oceans is a very thin skim of coating over the planet. The oceans inside the Earth crust are gigantic, right? Just like the hypothesis with abductions being weird or not happening, it would be weirder if an advanced civilization didn't go underground, because they know that down there it is safe from floods, meteorites, solar flares, pole shifts. I mean, damn, you name it. The surface of the Earth is getting pelted by death on a regular basis, and we've had a good run. But it's only a matter of time. If you wanted to, if you are of Atlantis and you see that this shit's going down, the surface, I mean, the legend of Atlantis shows that it sunk into the waters due to hubris, but that hubris was in conjunction with natural disasters. You know, tectonic plates collided with each other and Atlantis went into the mantle due to it. That shit does not happen beneath the surface of the Earth. That's where a civilization would go if it was highly advanced, highly technological. And if you got to that point of technology, your species might not be necessarily physical anymore. You might become ethereal. That is to say, untouchable, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, they've figured out how to be ultra-terrestrial.
Right.
And that
kind of sums up the ultra-terrestrial hypothesis, the fact that they are from Earth, but much older and wiser than we have ignorantly assumed.
Right. Yeah, like you were saying, we think we're the top intelligence in like the universe, and it's like
we're the top as far as topology goes. We're the top as far as the surface, but
yeah, top on the surface world. Never mind the inner Earth, whole entire parallel civilization.
Right. You ever check out Edadorpa?
You know what? I was actually looking at some stuff on YouTube about that. What is that?
So for Edadorpa, our listeners, is a man who he's an alchemist, but failed. But he was extremely wise. He took alchemy to be a physical science, like a lot of people do. But he was in Masonic groups, and he failed. He did not quench his thirst of knowing. The esoteric nature of this man's mind did not want to stop at, you know, these surface secrets or whatever. So he started spilling the beans of all these secret societies. So his punishment from these secret societies was to put him through initiation, the top dog initiation, the big dog initiation, the real thing, which involved a tour of the inner world. So they regressively aged him to where he couldn't die, and then put him basically through hell and back. And by the time he was done, he had seen the entirety of the inner earth, and but lost everything. His family had grown old and died. They're gone. He's still alive. No friends, no family. He paid the ultimate price for the ultimate wisdom. A bittersweet, really. But he came back. Well, came back. He emerged, I should say, you know, several hundreds of years later to tell John Uri Lloyd about it. Now, okay, there's a little thing here. He didn't tell John Uri Lloyd about it specifically. John Uri Lloyd had the balls to actually publish this book because the book is bonkers. The guy he told was a different man, but that's kind of irrelevant. But he told a story and said, lock it up 30 years and then release it whenever mankind is ready. Wow. And then just as the book came out, Manly P. Hall became a very prominent Mason and embraced the book himself as a nonfiction novel. And it's fascinated me ever since. I've been meaning to do a video on this book, but have not succeeded in that past just mentioning it here and there, because honestly, the book is so scientifically advanced that I can't quite wrap my head around it. And when I say scientifically advanced, that's literally what I mean. I don't mean esoterically advanced. The book is so scientifically advanced that scientists all around the world in the 1930s wrote letters to John saying, how did you know this and that about science? How did you know this and that about how water acts in zero gravity? How did you know this and that about molecules and how they act within photons whenever they pass through matter? How did you know this? How did you know that? To which John Uri Lloyd said, bro, did you read the book? I didn't come up with it. It was passed down to me. And the scientists were like, dude, we're assuming this is fiction. And he's like, no, it ain't. So scientists are still, what's the best example? Do you know how siphoning a liquid, whenever you put a hose into a surface of water, and then you can siphon the liquid and the water will come up the tube,
yes,
and then out of the hose and then continue coming out, right?
Right.
That was a myth, like Bigfoot, only a couple hundred years ago. Because of this book, he published this book, and the guy was arguing with him back and forth about how surface water can do a lot of different things between two different poles. Conducted this experiment to prove to him that it was possible. The reason we have siphoning capabilities now is because of that book. Scientists said it was impossible. That book said it was possible. That's how weird this fucking book gets, bro.
Okay. Now, I'm saying, I was watching something on YouTube about it. I heard about it from you. I heard you mention it like a couple different times.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I started looking into it a little bit. Okay, so how do we spell the name of that?
Etidorpa is Aphrodite backwards. So it's Etidorhpa.
Oh, wow.
It's still one of those things where a scientist today who does not have fucking time for weird shit can reach into that book and say, this thing here is not possible. Recreate it in a lab. Sure enough, it's possible. Another one is that he claims that when he went into inner earth, there's no wind. And there's also no earthquakes. So he came upon a body of water that was gigantic. There's no telling how big it was, but it was a lake. He said that it was a sheet of glass. So he walked up on it, and he's got a host, this friend of his that is leading him the way, right? So he's walking up to it. He's like, okay, so I looked upon an abyss, like a Grand Canyon, and it was covered in a sheet of glass, of solid, hard glass. And he said, what is this substance? His host was like, that's water. He said, that's not water. That's a solid glass material. He said, go touch it. He said, he touched it. It was water. He said, how is this possible? He said, without any disturbances, he's like, as a human being, you've never seen water undisturbed. This is impossible for you to comprehend. He's like, I could see the bottom of, so whenever we look into water, it could be the ocean, the clearest water, right? You've seen clear water before, you can see the pebbles. Oh my God, 10 feet deep, I can see the pebbles. No, if water is left undisturbed and pristine, it doesn't necessarily go stagnant. We assume that water goes stagnant, gets mosquitoes, all this shit. We live on the surface. It's chaos up here, right? Down there, water left undisturbed is like the epitome of epitome, sorry. That's what happens when you read too much. of nutrients down there. It's undisturbed.
Oh, dude, I could only imagine all the goodies that's in that water.
Right. And dude, check out, and one thing that you'll love is the he goes into a world of mushrooms where mushrooms are 12 feet tall and they're all hallucinogens. And he goes on a trip. That by itself is a whole nother book right there. So the book is basically insane, right, to anybody. And then unlike 99% of books that are batshit crazy out there, everything in this book can be scientifically tested and verified. And that makes this book, to me, front page news. However, as you might imagine, it ain't. But yeah, a lake of water, completely undisturbed, looks like glass. And it was amazing to him, and it's amazing to everybody ever since then. And scientists, so there's about 10 or 12 maybe things in this book that need to be scientifically verified, of which about 6 of them have been, every one of which has been verified. The rest of them have not been, not because of scrutiny, but because of scientific funding and give a fuck. I mean, quite frankly, give a fuck. And that brings me to the section in here where he says that you can actually, and this is going to get wild, dude, but go with me on this. It's in the book. I'm reporting this. It's in the book that you can turn your eyes backwards, not physically, but turn your vision backwards and look into your own brain, your own physical brain, and see your own brain. However, science doesn't seem to want to touch it, you know?
Wow. So I wonder how the light, like, how you would see it.
That's the thing. That's another thing in this book is light. They're talking about external light. This is going to cross into some fucking weird shit. But they're talking about everything emanates light because everything is light. So we are used to external light lights us up, the sunlight, whatever. We can see because of light. Apparently, that's profane, according to this book. If you eat a piece of cheese, you're eating light. You're eating sunlight, right? Because the grass is made out of light. The cow is made out of light. It ingests the light. You suck that milk out of that cow titty, and then the milk comes out. The milk is light. Everything is light. Now, it's got matter and molecules attached to it, but that's dirty. It's essentially light. What we absorb with nutrients is light, sunlight. This is why sun gazing is an incredible activity. Not to be done during an eclipse, by the way, disclaimer. But everything is light. If you allow that to be, and it's quite that simple, allow it to be. That is to get rid of all of your preconceptions about what matter is. To truly become a child again, like the Bible tells you to do. Light is everything. You can see in the dark. This sounds like insanity until you realize that snakes can do it. Predatory reptiles across the board can see in pitch black. And I'm not talking about owls here. Owls can see in the dark. Snakes can see in pitch black caves, right? So their eyes are what's working there. It's not an infrared sensor. It's not their tongue smelling. They can see in pitch black. It's because everything emanates light, but we are trained to not see that light the same way that people who don't have a word for the color blue cannot see the color blue. We're just programmed, and that's real easy to do, apparently. Shamefully, real easy to do. All it takes is 12 years of school.
Yeah, that's a long time. School after school.
Right.
It's, yeah, man. Some serious schooling.
Everything is heat. Everything is light. And with proper training, you can see it with your eyes. And by the way, this is what Eastern gurus have been saying for thousands of years. We just don't.
Yeah, yeah, dude. And you know there's, like, pranitarians. Like, they just breathe and, like, a fucking breatharian, like, living for, like, years off no food. Like,
right. We find that to be a myth, too. We thought that was a myth until 2004.
Yeah, people don't believe me about that. But I'm like, dude, yes, there is. There is. You can look it up. There's people who just survived. They're like, no, they're lying. Yeah, okay.
That's the ignorance of our society, is that we can have something that is self-evident and still not be believed. Then again, I understand it, because there's people out there saying the earth is flat because it looks like it. So it's true that you really can't believe your eyes. By the way, it doesn't look like it. You can look at the horizon, it stops. But at the same time, there are things that are self-evident that we refuse to believe because, quote, I'm quoting myself, but quote, it just can't be. So it ain't. That's not good.
Right. Yeah, that's not a good thought to have. A healthy way of thinking. You're just keeping yourself in a box. But some people prefer that.
Some people prefer it. It's safe in that box, bro.
Yeah, they're very comfy in the box, you know.
Right. That's the same as getting up in the morning. Walking naked into the cold, you know, the black cube, it can be transcended the moment that you are at home in the uncertainty of the freezing cold naked, not knowing what's going to happen. It is what it is. My mentality, one of those things where I have to stay safe, right? All of a sudden, you're going to give up a lot of your own personal freedoms and personal agenda, ego, and what you are meant to do. Albert Einstein said, a ship is safest when it's docked, but that's not what it's meant to do. I feel like the berserkers, these Vikings, had it figured out the most whenever they would do mushrooms, Amanita muscaria mushroom specifically, and battle, and they couldn't feel the pain of battle, so they won every single battle. The reason they won was because they couldn't feel the pain. The reason they couldn't feel the pain was because they knew that it wasn't, because pain isn't. There is no such thing as pain.
Right.
The, You know, the physical body feels pain. Throw it away. It ain't no good. The berserkers knew that you could throw the body into a garbage disposal and the person will be fine. Once you get to that point, which I'm not, by the way, I ain't. Just quick disclaimer, I ain't there. A lot of people comment on my YouTube channel like, you must be real enlightened. You vape or you drink alcohol, but much for an enlightened one, which I quickly comment back, bitch, I ain't enlightened. I ain't none of that shit. I am not even fucking close. I'm reporting on what I found here. That's it.
Yeah, but, right, dude.
But these dudes, man, once they realized that pain was not existing, they didn't feel it anymore. That's mind over matter. I mean, that's it, dude. If you don't fear pain, you don't fear death. And if you know that no matter what happens to the body, you will be fine. And so I go into this in Dying is Perfectly Safe, our YouTube video over there, based off of Eric's near-death experience. He's a friend of the channel, but he kind of went over his near-death experience with me. But he came to realize that, and the reason the video is called Dying is Perfectly Safe is because the reason I had to put a disclaimer at the front of that video to prevent suicide was that not only is dying safe, but it's a relief. You as you are, as your person, your personality, your photo albums, the songs you've written, the relationships that you've had, your memories, you keep everything. The only thing you're shedding is pain. So you are you still, but in effect, the most pure version of you possible. And as you'd imagine, again, we had to put a suicide prevention disclaimer at the front of that video. But it's real. Tibetan Book of the Dead, Egyptian Book of the Dead, across the board. It's safe. Dying is safe. Worst case scenario, you go back into a human body. Worst case scenario.
All right, and do it again.
And do it again. Maybe 1,000 times.
Yeah, right. Maybe 1,000,000 times.
Right.
Holy shit, dude.
There's this Eastern parable that I found to be absolutely just fucking gorgeous. I eat this shit up. There was a man going to the Buddha, and he said, Buddha, how do I, by the way, not Siddhartha. All these guys are called Buddha. But he was like, how do I escape this bombardment of samsara? Every time I'm born, it's to the human world again. I'm sick of this shit. What do I gotta do? And the Buddha was like, you'll have to do 1,000 lives. And the guy was like, fuck, 1,000 more of this shit. I'm fucking sick of rice, you know? So a second man came to the Buddha, and he was like, so how do I transcend this whole human shit? And the Buddha was like, well, you'll have to redo it 10,000 times. And the guy was like, how beautiful. I get to live on Earth over 10,000 times. And he immediately transcended samsara. There's a cruel irony to this. If you hate it here, you do it again. If you love it here, you leave. Fuck.
What do you
do? I'm not in a big hurry.
Wow.
But I also get sick of this shit real fast, just like anybody else, dude.
Oh, no, dude. I love it. I love it.
Right.
I love it all, man. And yeah, I'm glad I found your channel. It's definitely taught me a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, in the past couple months, you know, it's definitely been one of my go-to channels. I'm glad we got to link up, man.
Appreciate it.
And but hey,
one hour.
We're at 1 hour and 15 right now.
Yeah.
But that's fine. One more thing I want to tell you is the shaman in Peru They have like a Shakruni like family. It's like invisible jungle spirits.
Okay.
And they'll come and get the shaman for like a few days. The shaman will like go missing and they'll just appear again. And so they're like physically like getting like teleported into another dimension, like for a few days and then coming back.
Right.
So like, I had to tell you that because that's crazy.
It affects the physical as well.
So, well, that's a, you know, have you heard of Dreaming Jaguars on YouTube? Okay, they're a DMT. They're actually the first guest I ever interviewed. And they're a DMT channel from the UK. And that's what I commented on their video the other day. Like, what are the possibilities? Like, at some point, do you do enough where you like physically dematerialize? Like, what are the possibilities?
Right.
I mean, because just some of these stories are just so crazy, like other people's stories.
I mean, that's a great question. And I don't know, but if we are to assume using Occam's razor that consciousness comes first and then matter, which for me is a done deal. That's in the bag. If consciousness comes first and then matter comes from that and not the other way around, which we've been deceived into, it would not be outrageous to think that mind over matter can affect physical matter. And if that sounds crazy, go talk to somebody with multiple personality disorder and see that one of their personalities is allergic to shellfish to the point to where they'll die. And another one can eat it all damn day.
Crazy.
It's so mind over matter is to me proof. And by the way, placebo. You can heal by believing that you're healed. That's done deal for me, dude. It's consciousness is first. So if we, that's what makes this a holograph. That's what makes this a simulation, is the fact that there is consciousness and that's it. That's done. It's just consciousness. And consciousness experiences itself a lot of different ways. One of them happens to be physical matter. But we think that's everything because we're in that physical matter. But all it is just a little fractal of consciousness experiencing itself. So you kind of get the case where that, you know, that Chinese guy woke up in the military facility, you know, 600 miles away from his home. It took, his whole body was there. It was, they had to deport him. It was a big freak out. News reporters, the military wrote a big report on it. You know, he was in a military facility that you could not break into. Nobody could. He woke up. He went to bed one night and woke up in that facility. Impossible, you know?
So weird, yeah.
Right.
Or, you know, we got the stories of a jet full of people up in the sky. It takes off. It's 1950 something, and it lands, and it's 40 years later. And, like, the whole jet and, like, everybody inside got taken to, like, a military base and was never seen again. But I've heard that story from a couple different people.
It brings up a lot of questions about the planes that go missing nowadays that we've seen.
Strange stuff afoot, my friend.
Afoot? It's afoot. And pretty soon, it's going to be right up to our chins. I hope everybody's ready.
Oh, yeah. The new Earth. The new Earth is on its way, everybody. So, but hey, we're the favorite version yet. So let's have a good time and love this place.
Keep the high hopes.
Keep the high hope. And, you know, let's keep having these conversations. And we're going to go deeper with the podcast from now on. I think we've already established disclosure. So let's have some more great talks. I want to thank you for being episode number 27, Library of the Untold on YouTube. All the links are going to be in the show notes. And I've already put on like three different people to your channel. So.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, dude, definitely. So I'm glad we made this happen, and I hope to talk to you soon, man.
Absolutely, man. Invite me on again. I'll be there.
Awesome, dude. Thank you. Have a good one, man.
I'll see you, bro. Bye.
All right, later.